shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
We must pass this legislation, and we must take whatever time it takes.
The problem is that this administration's view of governance is that economic prosperity is created by...
Bill O'Reilly the other night said that the actions of James O'Keefe and his colleagues were totally insane.
It was rude, and it was disrespectful behavior towards a co-equal branch of government.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
So many of these people are so poor, and they are so black.
I forgot he was black tonight.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And coming at this hour, we'll dispose of some of these all kinds of media stories because, as we've often said on this show, the news and the media have become so closely connected, one needing the other to increase its expansion or to survive, and the other being influenced by the reporting from the media. So I don't really know. I just think it's funny, you know, for instance, you know, what we think are big stories and what we think people understand and what we think is a headline. And I often tell my crew, I say, just because CNN and Fox and MSNBC and The New York Times have it as a banner headline, it doesn't mean anybody knows anything about it or anybody cares anything about it. Now we have Chris Matthews. We've got David Schuster. We've got this guy Brooks. You've heard of this guy, right? This is another story that's a little bit under the radar for most people. But here in the world of broadcast media, oh, my God, it's huge. Oberman, I was watching that nut today, and you'd swear it was Watergate, too. He can't get off it, man. Oberman is hunching this thing, and he's all over it. He's making love to that story that James O'Keefe and that bunch of stumble bums that went into that Landry office, and who knows what they were trying to do. They're not wiretapping. They were standing there. They were pulling some goof, doing some prank, which still has got them in hot water and could put them in prison. It's a felony. There's no question. It's trespassing federal property. And this guy O'Keefe has probably worn his welcome out with that one fell swoop action there in New Orleans. He has probably worn his welcome out with everybody. Fox, Breitbart, you name it. You know, I've been doing this kind of radio, this kind of put on shtick for a long time. And I look at these guys who put that banana peel out on the sidewalk and then they roll the camera to see who's going to walk by and slip on it. And you got to put that banana peel out there the right way, man. And you can't, the more you involve yourself in making it happen, the more you involve yourself in manipulating events so the thing that you want to happen happens, the deeper you get into doo-doo land, Jack, the deeper and the smellier you're getting. You know, if you can make these things happen, if things happen, I should say, by themselves, and you just happen to be there with the camera, well, you're a journalist. If things happen by themselves and you happen to be there with a notepad, you're a journalist. If something takes place, if a building blows up, if an elephant squishes a guy, if a car flies off a bridge, if the, you know, if 9/11 happens and you're there and you write about it and you are a reporter, you're a journalist, that's what you do. If, however, you flew the plane into the building, or you shot the elephant, or you drove the car off the cliff. You know, you have now made yourself a part of the story. And so you could become a documentarian, maybe. Maybe you're a satirist. Maybe you're an entertainer of some kind. And now we have to judge you on a whole different in a whole different area. And, of course, if you wind up getting arrested because you ran afoul of the law and you're trying to make some person look bad who didn't even know you had a camera on you, let alone they didn't even know you existed, let alone had a camera on you. Well, now, Jack, you're in some deep trouble. All right. So that's O'Keefe. And that's that story. Now we have Chris Matthews. And what did he do? He said the following thing, and, well, let's play it for you. Here is last night. It's MSNBC's Chris Matthews. He forgot Obama was black. And he says, I forgot Obama was black. Now, for more context on these comments, we're going to take a look at Chris Matthews' commentary, and he's trying to explain why he said what he said, and then we'll tell you why he's, quote-unquote, peeing up a rope. Anyway, here's Chris Matthews last night.
You know, I was trying to think about who he was tonight, and It's interesting. He is post-racial, by all appearances. You know, I forgot he was black tonight for an hour. You know, he's gone a long way to become a leader of this country and passed so much history in just a year or two. I mean, it's something we don't even think about. I was watching. I said, wait a minute. He's an African-American guy in front of a bunch of other white people. And there he is, President of the United States. And we've completely forgotten that tonight. Completely forgotten it. I think it was in the scope of his discussion. It was so broad-ranging, so in tune with so many problems and aspects of American life that you don't think in terms of the old tribalism, the old ethnicity. It was astounding in that regard, a very subtle fact. Uh-huh. It's so hard to even talk about. I shouldn't talk about it, but I am. I thought it was profound that way.
Yeah, well, you blew it. All right, anyway, here is Matthews trying to clarify what he meant by his comments.
I'm very proud I did it, and I hope I can say it the right way. You know, this country's been, and I grew up in a country that was driven apart by race right until the 60s. You couldn't have a black member of the United States cabinet. There were no black cabinet members in the Kennedy administration. It has been such a big part of our life in big cities, this sort of ethnic debate, ethnic fighting. And then to see a president of the United States who is African-American, I was thinking tonight, this isn't even an issue tonight. How far we've come in just a year, where it was a campaign issue in some parts of the country. It was talked about as something that would hurt him. And it wasn't in the room tonight. You could feel it wasn't there tonight. And that takes leadership on his part to get us beyond these divisions. Really national leadership. And I felt it wonderfully tonight. So it was almost like an epiphany.
Now, let me tell you what's wrong with all of that. And I understand what Chris said there. I understand that what he said there was what he wanted us to take away from his initial comment, I forgot he was black tonight. Now, we learned last spring from no less a person than David Letterman that perception is everything. We learned that from the New York Post. Perception is everything. I remember sitting here and trying to explain how the monkey cartoon in the New York Post was not racist. It was, in point of fact, a comment about the chimp that had attacked the woman in Connecticut a few days before. Nobody bought it. Maybe what I was saying was right. I believe it was. To this day, I believe it was. However, I have to say, if the perception is the what it is, it's a monkey is supposed to be Obama. That's it, man. So this cat that drew the cartoon blew it. It was not very elegant. It was not very artful, and it didn't hit the point, and it did not make the point he wanted it to make. He screwed up with the images that he chose. All right. The same thing with Letterman and the joke that he made about Palin's daughter. And Letterman himself, because he's a pro and he knows what humor is, he came out the next night and he said, I have to live with the perception that I created. Whether or not, I meant to do that, whether or not I meant to leave that in your mind, that's not the point. He said, I didn't mean to disrespect Sarah Palin. I wasn't talking about that daughter. I don't believe him. I don't. But however, he did own that because I said the things that I said, people took it a certain way, and I have to take responsibility for that because perception is everything. Now, Matthews, it doesn't sound like he's learned that lesson. But when you say, I forgot he was black tonight, the first thing that comes into someone's mind is, you mean he's actually a president? He's not just a black guy standing there. By God, he's a president. I forgot he was black tonight. He was presidential then. Yeah. Jeez, up to this point, I'm looking at this black guy, and look at this. This guy's, he's black, he's president. Now, Matthews can talk about the 60s and all of this and the urbanness and the urban. I know what he is. He's a white boy. He's a smart guy. He's a good writer. He's struggling a little bit with his broadcast career because he's not quite, I don't think he quite understands the medium he's in. Nonetheless, I'm sure he's a fine man, and I'm sure he's a great friend and father or whatever the hell he is. But the fact is, he's a white man raised in America. And he sees a Barack Obama as a black man, just as he sees other black people as black. And now he sees a black guy there as president. And this cat's acting presidential. By God, I forgot that he was black. I forgot that he had them thick lips and those big ears. And look at this guy. He's giving a speech. Now, that was the perception. And I got to tell you something, Chris. I think that's what you were thinking. I know you're not a bad guy, and I'm not even calling you a racist. I'm just saying that's what you were thinking. And the thing that it galls people is that Chris is a progressive. There's conservatives, there's progressives. There's liberals, there's this. There's that, there's this. progressives have somehow in this life been able to paint a picture of some, with some credibility that the racial problem is not theirs, that it falls strictly with conservatives. And of course, anybody that lives in this, anybody who's anyone who knows anything about white people, and I think that the progressives think they're selling that to black people because they ain't selling it to other white people. There's not a white man or woman alive that believes progressives are not racist, cannot be racist people. I think they're pitching that to black folks. And black people aren't that stupid. So at the end of the day, they're talking to themselves. The fact of the matter is that they are just as racist in their own way as conservatives. And they are just as arrogant, and they are just as entitled, and they are just as, oh, gosh. And when Keith Olbermann calls Michael Steele a self-hating black man, that is the height of a bespectacled, four-eyed-looking dork sitting there in New York, big white boy in his gray suit and his white shirt and his striped tie, the progressive of America, Mr. Liberal himself, Keith Olbermann, calling a black man self-hating, like he is even qualified to be in the discussion, right? That's the thing that pisses off people more than anything else. Yeah, I know the conservatives are a pain in the ass. The Tea Party people are a bunch of phonies. There's all kinds of grief that we can pass around to everybody. But you cats on the progressive side, you better get in line, man, because you people are as guilty of some things that are just as egregious as anybody. So quit trying to lecture people on poor, black, Jew, Indian, and, deign to come down from your cloud and your ivory tower and join the rest of the unwashed, the human race, and let's get shoulder to shoulder and quit with all of your high and mighty horse dung, all right? And by the way, MSNBC, if you really want some credibility, you could hire, like, one black guy to just, like, do a weather break, you know?
Yeah, they ain't got no black people over there, and that's for sure.
Got it. Hire one black guy to just go, and it's 36 degrees. All right, back to you, Keith. Thank you. All right, coming up, a senator gets ganged up on, if you'll pardon the expression, by two MSNBC reporters, and he wasn't happy. 877-876-PHIL, plus twitter.com/PhilHendryShow. We'll be right back. He wasn't ganged up on. He ganged up on those two, anyway.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You got what?
Well, that there.
Oh, about Geico.com, huh?
Oh, man, I went over to Geico.com, and they are one of your sponsors. I found out they don't just do auto insurance. They also do ID theft protection, homeowner insurance, and flood and life insurance. And
give me that. Are you reading that?
No.
Well, anyway, you're right. Geico.com does do all of that. They are a sponsor, and they don't just do that car stuff, and they don't just do what the lizard says, and they don't just do what the Charlie Daniels plays a mean fiddle.
Yeah, they got all that stuff.
I got a homeowner insurance there.
You're kidding.
Oh.
Well, so there you go. So Geico.com does it all, right? So check them out, Geico.com. All right, in our other media report here tonight on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, speaking of media, speaking of interactive media, speaking of new media, www.philhendryshow.com, www.philhendryshow.com. Judd Gregg lectures MSNBC and NBC Speedo and calls them inappropriate, irresponsible, and a couple of sluts. No, he doesn't. He says that MSNBC was irresponsible. Now, let me tell you who Judd Gregg is. That his name, Judd Gregg? Yeah. It's one of those guys that could be Greg Judd Gregg, and nobody would know who this jackass is were it not for the fact that he pulled a stunt at the beginning of Obama's term. This guy, Greg Judd, I don't like this guy as far as I could spit into a hurricane. I didn't like him when he pulled this stunt with Obama, who was filling out his cabinet positions, and this slob accepted the job of Secretary of the Interior, and within 24 hours turned it down because he had some philosophical differences with Obama. Now, this is what he did. He took the job in the Obama administration, and the president had been asking and seeking a bipartisan constituency, if you will, in the cabinet. And this was a great opportunity to put a Republican in the cabinet. But Judd Gregg had no interest in being in Obama's cabinet. He had one interest and one interest only, getting a little FaceTime on the national hookup so that when the time came, people would know who he is. Well, I'll tell you what he is. He's a smart guy. He's a run-of-the-mill Republican, and he's a turd. Judd Gregg of New Hampshire, just a walking turd. And when the day finally, you know, arrives that his moment is there to be seized, I think he'll seize up. You know, look, you don't have to like Obama. You like him, you don't like him. I don't like to see anybody used that way. And Obama, sure, the guy was a babe in the woods. But this guy, Gregg, he had no intention of being a part of that cabinet. He just went, I don't think I will. Why is that? Well, I got some serious differences. Oh, is that right? And if you hadn't have done what you did, nobody would walk up to you and ask you your opinion because you're that dull, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Thank you. So anyway, Senator Judd Gregg attacked MSNBC host Contessa Brewer and Melissa Francis. Having said what I just said, this was fantastic.
Yo, you liked it.
Yes, just pay attention, man. He attacked Contessa Brewer and Melissa Francis on Thursday, questioning their integrity as journalists and calling them irresponsible. As well he should, because they were so freaking predictable, they didn't even know what it was they were asking. The scuffle started with Francis asking Gregg to name specific areas of the budget he would cut after he criticized the White House's proposed freeze on non-defense discretionary spending. Gregg, naturally, and that would be something you'd think a Republican would support, right? And of course, Judd can't do that because he doesn't really think for himself. Anyway, he did have a good round here against these MSNBC reporters who, you know, they're not reporters at all. So it's always fun to see those guys get bounced off the deck. Here is Senator Judd Gregg getting into a scuffle, a tiff, a little dust up with MSNBC's Melissa Francis.
Jobs are not created by the government. You know, long-term good jobs are created by a vibrant economy, and you don't get a vibrant economy when the government and the size of the government and the debt of the government is overwhelming the capacity of the economy to function well.
That's good in theory, Senator. How would you practically...
It's not theory.
Well, tell me how to put it to work. Tell me very practically.
How do you get off saying something like that?
Because it is good in theory.
All right. So next, Gregg goes after MSNBC's Contessa Brewer. So you say, well, is that good in theory? Who are you? I'm Judd Gregg.
So my partner, Melissa, Senator Gregg, is really asking for specifics. If you don't believe that we should have a $1.3 trillion budget, which programs are you willing to cut? Are you willing to tell schools no money for you?
Well, first off, nobody's saying no money for schools. What an absurd statement to make.
What a dishonest statement to make.
On its face, you're being fundamentally dishonest when you make that type of statement.
Do you know how much money we're spending
at the federal government on education this year?
All right, so he had a great point there. He was dead on right, and he cut him off at the pass. It was a stupid comment for her to make, so score one there for Judd. And he ends the interview arguing with the hosts over their misrepresentation over the issue of cutting spending.
The problem is that this administration's view of governance is that economic prosperity is created by growing the government dramatically. And then it gets misrepresented by people like yourself who say they're going to, that if you do any of this stuff, you're going to end up not funding education. I mean, that statement alone is the most irresponsible statement
It wasn't a statement, it was a question.
And there are a lot of irresponsible statements made by reporters, and that was the most irresponsible.
Senator, with respect, that's not what she said. She was asking you what you would like to cut specifically, and
Senator,
I think you answered the question.
Exactly, we appreciate your time. Go back and read your transcript.
We appreciate your time today.
You can't be duplicitous about this. You can't make a representation and then claim you didn't make it. You know, it just shouldn't work that way. You've got to have some integrity on your side of this camera, too.
But he heard something in his headpiece, and he said...
What's a gay what?
And he never did get an answer. No way. I want to go back and listen. What did she say he said? What did he say she said?
The problem is that this administration's view of governance is that economic prosperity is created by growing the government dramatically. And then it gets misrepresented by people like yourself who say they're going to... that if you do any of this stuff, you're going to end up not funding education. I mean, that statement alone is the most irresponsible statement I've heard.
It was a question.
So, you know, they put it as a question. He heard it as a statement. Their question was a statement, and he heard the question as a statement. So, you don't ask a question like that. Would you have them cut education? And he was right. Nobody said anything about cutting education. There wasn't any specific discussion of where these cuts would come, but they went right to the education thing because they're on MSNBC and he's Judd Gregg. He's a conservative. So he was right. But he still needs to get the answer to
what's a gay what?
Because,
it's probably his pictures there.
Right. 877-876-PHIL. His pictures there.
Yeah. If you look that up. And
all right. I get it. 877-876-PHIL. Pope John Paul used to self-flagellate. That's right, bud. And that doesn't mean what you think.
What does that mean then?
It means he took a rope and beat himself on the back with it.
Yeah.
That's what it means. And Justice Alito gets upset over the State of the Union address. It's world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry.
Burn in hell.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and our website, philhenryshow.com, will have a download of our show available tomorrow. You can listen to the show on your iPod if you missed it, if you want to listen to it again, or what have you. And if you'd like to watch the video cast again, you can go and check our five-day archive. Why is it still printing, bud?
I don't know. The story's like, I got to get another page on it.
This is the Schuster story. David Schuster, I told you we have a lot of... What the hell happened to it, man? I told you that we have a lot of news here having to do with media, and we sure as hell do. Here it is. This is a David Schuster story now from MSNBC. So you heard that Contessa Brewer and her friend, whatever the hell her name is, Melissa Francis, they get into it with this guy, Judd Gregg, who really, they did him a favor because he's a real douchebag. And throwing Contessa Brewer up against him, you know, at what point, MSNBC, you're going to take a look at her and say, you know something, you're such a liability, you're fired. Get out of here. If we hear one more stupid thing coming out of you, and then, you know, like anybody else in that network that they've canned over the years, didn't they get rid of that other guy? What's his name? Taylor Tucker or something?
Taylor, you're Tucker Taylor.
Yeah, no, yeah, Taylor, Tyler Taylor Tucker.
What do you mean Tyler Taylor Tucker Carlson is his name.
Yeah.
Tyler Taylor Tucker. They fired him because he said something dumb. All right. 877-876-PHIL. Now, the guys want me to do this story. You want me to do this story on the Pope beating himself, huh?
Well, it's an interesting story on the way that a Pope is going to take out a rope and beat himself. Nobody ever think about a Pope do that.
Well, you know why I'm not interested in that? Because I'm a Catholic and I kind of get it.
What is that supposed to mean?
I don't know. I mean, I'm a Catholic. I just get it. I mean, Catholicism, the essence of Catholicism in many ways is the suffering of Jesus Christ. That's why we have the picture of him hanging there. And so a lot of Catholics like to suffer. I went into the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris when I was there back in 1999. And I walked in and I'd forgotten because I'm an American Catholic, which means we go in, being an American Catholic is like midnight mass on Christmas. It's just, yeah! What's up, Billy? Hey, how you doing? You know, we all go in, man, and they're playing the music. It's like midnight mass. You know, we go in, but the rest of the world is still real old school Catholic. I walked into the Notre Dame Cathedral there. I say Notre Dame so you won't get confused, bud, with the...
With the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, with the Fighting Irish. And I went over there, and there were these Haitians, speak of the devil, if you'll pardon the expression, but they speak of the present times. There were these Haitian women, very Catholic country... When it ain't, you know.
Yeah, it ain't voodoo.
Right. And they were kneeling right on the hard brick floor of the Notre Dame Cathedral, kneeling and praying, and had been there for hours. Why? Well, it's penance. It's pain. You're kneeling on this hard. It's just a Catholic thing. I don't know how to explain it. Now, I never did anything like that, because I was a relatively healthy kid. Although, in my mind, torture, and I mean pain and torture, was just going to Mass. So, anyway, the Pope story, I'll do it for you if you want, bud, but it don't gun my engine, man. It's weird. It's weird to people that aren't Catholics, but the Catholics, I kind of get it, man. And the cat was doing it in private, and he wasn't doing it out in the public, and it's just a thing that the Pope, and it was another thing about that is it makes him feel humble. He knows he's the Pope, right?
Yeah.
So to become humble, he goes back to his room and beats the crap out of himself with a knotted rope.
Man, are you kidding me? What is that supposed to mean?
I mean, the guy's the Pope, right?
Yeah, but he knows he's the Pope. But you telling me he don't ought to be so humble, he go back, knot up a rope, and beat hell out of himself?
Yeah, what's that?
It's to remind himself to be humble. I can't explain it. He's the Pope, right? He's got the hat.
Yeah, he's wearing a cardboard hat.
What do you mean a cardboard hat?
Well, what's it made out of?
He's wearing that pointed hat, and he's walking around like he's God's gift to the world, which I guess that's what the Pope is. And he has on the robes, and he's flying around in the Pope mobile, and everyone thinks that he's all this and a bag of freaking pork rinds. And he's the most powerful religious guy on earth. And what we don't know, what we don't see, is that he goes back to his room at night and
Reads Blue Boy. Will you just... Hey, man, I'm kidding around.
Goes back to his room at night and beats the crap out of himself with like a cat of nine tails.
Man, that is sick. And no other way of looking at sick.
It ain't sick. You just got to understand the mindset. It's something to keep him feeling humble and close to God. That's all I can tell you. And if you don't understand, you don't understand it, right? Now let's get over. Speaking of beating yourself with a cat of nine tails and reading Blue Boy, David Schuster. I'm kidding. David Schuster of MSNBC has been called on the carpet, which I've never understood what that term means. It means basically he was called into the office of an NBC executive, tripped, and then he fell on his face on the carpet and was told to lay there. That's what I think it means. Because of inappropriate tweets that he's been making concerning the James O'Keefe busting into the Mary Landrieu office caper. David Schuster, often seen on MSNBC on his own program, he also does some reporting for other shows, has been, along with MSNBC, obsessed over this Mary Landrieu, James O'Keefe story. Just before leaving for New Orleans to cover this story, Schuster used a Twitter message to tell conservative filmmaker James O'Keefe, one of the four men arrested by the FBI, that he's, quote, not a journalist, end quote, that he, quote, intended to tap phones, end quote, and that he will go to prison. Now, even though Schuster does some commentary as well as reporting, that was viewed as a little bit over the line by the NBC execs. Now, it should be noted that none of the four are being cited for wiretapping, although that's what Schuster said they intended to do. Nor is there any indication that wiretapping was even planned. According to MSNBC, an MSNBC spokesperson, those comments were inappropriate, and we have talked to David about them. Now, let's listen here. We have an interview on MSNBC with David Kermit Schuster. Andrew Breitbart of Breitbart.com calls out Schuster for his inappropriate tweets. So, Breitbart busts Schuster here.
Bill O'Reilly the other night said that the actions of James O'Keefe and his colleagues were totally insane. Were they?
Well, they were totally insane as broken on MSNBC, in which you guys slandered him by saying that he was charged with wiretapping. And that's factually incorrect. So I'm waiting for MSNBC to retract that information. You've already been reprimanded today for your tweets in which you convicted James O'Keefe. You never granted, you granted the panty bomber and Major Hassan.
Well, Andrew, let me finish my statement. Andy, because we're going off topic.
Going off topic because Kermit got popped by Breitbart for his inappropriate tweets. Well, anyway, here Breitbart gets Kermit to retract his statements on Twitter.
I should not have used the word that it was wiretap. I should have used the word that the federal prosecutors used in their criminal complaint for the purpose of willfully
interfering
with the telephone system operated and controlled by the United States of America.
Are you going to retract?
If James O'Keefe pleads guilty,
are you going to retract it?
Yes.
Are you going to retract it? You retract the wiretap thing.
Sure, I retract. I should not have used the word
thank you very much because
tweet.
You tainted the jury.
The bottom line is
you tainted
James
the jury of his
much,
peers.
Well, now he retracted it, Breitbart. Now what do you want? Well, you tainted the jury. Now here they keep arguing. Listen,
Andrew, how much did James O'Keefe make as a salary of yours? And if he is convicted and if he does plead guilty, will he no longer be one of your employees? Will he no longer get money from you?
How much money does MSNBC get from Obama's stimulus money? I believe it's in the billions. What does that have to do with the fact that you falsely portrayed James O'Keefe as a felon? You convicted him on Twitter.
I've publicly stated that
he has a relationship with us, he's an independent filmmaker. What he does, I have a contract with Hachette, the book publisher, and it is separate from what I do on a day-to-day basis. He's an independent filmmaker, and you're trying to connect me to a crime that you're now retracting that he even did.
Now, so in other words...
You blew it!
But I don't think so. Breitbart, you ain't exactly squeaky clean. You know, you were cozying up to this guy O'Keefe, man. You were in each other's, well, if you'll pardon the expression, you were...
You are so hot.
You were right there with him. I mean, when he was the darling, when he was busted on Acorn, when everybody thought he was the next best thing to canned beer, you were all over him, man, like white on rice. So you can't all of a sudden distance yourself. You can't. Because if the cat, and this dude, if that had been successful, if he had gone in there and done what he wanted to do, God knows what it was. I don't think there's a human being on earth that knows. Until this thing goes to trial, nobody's going to know. So don't even worry about, if you think you understand, we know one thing, the criminal complaint is not about wiretapping. The criminal complaint is about trespassing on federal property. It has nothing to do with telephones. That having been said, the guy was there uninvited. He was pretending to be something that he wasn't, or his crew was. They were attempting to manipulate something regarding the office there. So we know that at least this is the charge, right? Now, you know, you go beyond the, you're no longer a journalist. Don't give me this journalist bull crap. And you're no longer really a documentarian. You're about as much a documentarian as Michael Moore is, because all he does is take this and take that and mix and match until it comes out the Michael Moore reality. That's not a documentarian. That's a propagandist. And that's exactly what you are, O'Keefe, a propagandist. Now, that you and Moore both would share the same cubicle. You'd share the same bed in Joseph Goebbels' office. Oh, yeah.
You blew it!
So.
Joseph Goebbels? Is he?
That's the guy that made Goebbels baby food, right?
Goebbels baby food, huh?
Well, what is that called?
Yeah, that's right.
No, jackass. It's called Goebbels baby food. If I would have walked into the Fuhrer's office and said, I got a great idea, Goebbels baby food, he'd get up and say,
you blew it!
All right, our number 8778, Goebbels baby food.
I don't know, man.
877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Henry Show. When we come back, we're going to pass out. No, when we come back, we're going to have the stories we couldn't get to. We may have one more little media story to throw in here, because there are all kinds of stuff. The author of Catcher in the Rye, the legendary youth hero and fugitive from fame, J.D. Salinger, passed on. I'm sure you know he was 91 years of age. He died of natural causes at his home on Wednesday, according to his son, Matt Salinger. It's world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
And his last words were,
you blew it!
Final thing, one final bit of serious news, and there's a really cool story here, and I mean cool, and then we have the stories we couldn't get to, and maybe I ought to do the cool story I'll do it second. So anyway, scientists in stolen email scandal hid climate data. This is the latest now on global climate change, and what the hell are they selling us now? You can't keep telling me, man, that this is a valid, bona fide, fact of life. And this crap keeps popping up. University at the center of the climate change row over stolen emails broke the law by refusing to hand over its raw data for public scrutiny. The University of East Anglia breached the Freedom of Information Act by refusing to comply with requests for data concerning claims by its scientists that man-made emissions were causing global warming. Well, the Freedom of Information Act... That's a U.S. law, so I suppose if you are making your data available in the United States, is that how that works? The Information Commissioner's Office decided, I guess the Freedom of Information Act is also British. The Information Commissioner's Office decided the UEA failed in its duties under the act, but said that it could not prosecute those involved because the complaint was made too late. The Times, that would be the Times of London, has learned the ICO is now... seeking to change the law to allow prosecution if a complaint is made more than 6 months after the breach. So these stolen emails revealed on the eve of the Copenhagen summit showed how the university's climate research unit attempted to thwart requests for scientific data and other information and suggests that senior figures at the university were involved in decisions to refuse the request. It's not known who stole the emails. Professor Phil Jones, the unit's director, well, you know the story, right? So it just gets, it just stinks. That's, it just stinks to high heaven, and there hasn't been a soul. Rather than say, as we have often requested, here is what we know, and if there's anybody that's got a question, if there's anybody that wants debate, we'll take all comers, because this is scientific fact, and if you cats are too stupid to understand it, we're happy to go out into the world and decimate, destroy, and eviscerate any dumbass that says that global climate change doesn't exist. We're happy to go into the world and debate the hell out of them. They didn't do it. Instead, what we find now is that not only did they phony up some of their information, they refused to turn the information over to other scientists. This is science, folks. This is when a man says, I have found out thus and so, and another scientist says, well, that's fantastic. Can I check your data? Can I? Why, certainly. We'd love to be able to see your data so we can check it again. There isn't a scientist worth his salt that would not welcome that opportunity. Not these guys, apparently. So that news will be of interest, and it'll be forthcoming, and we'll give it to you just as soon as... When we get it, you get it. And that could mean anything, man.
Yeah, especially if it's something that you got that you itch from.
That's great, bud. Thanks very much for that.
Itch from.
Especially if it's something you itch from. All right, anyway, we have our news that we couldn't get to coming up. One more story here. This is a heartwarming story. It's actually a dog-warming story. A frightened, shivering dog was rescued after floating at least 75 miles on an ice floe down Poland's Vistula River and into the Baltic Sea.
Wow.
That's right. Now his saviors just have to figure out who really owns him. Four people have already claimed him, but so far rescuers say there's been no wagging tail of joy from the miracle dog that they have nicknamed Baltic. Get this. The dog's frozen odyssey came as Poland suffers through a winter cold snap with temperatures dipping to below minus 4 Fahrenheit. The thick-furred male dog was found adrift on Monday, 15 miles out in the Baltic Sea by the crew of the Baltika, a Polish ship, of ocean scientists who are carrying out research, probably on global climate change. Anyway, researcher Natalia Durgas said on Thursday the rescue was difficult. At one point, it seemed the dog had drowned. It was really a tough struggle. He kept slipping into the water and crawling back on top of the ice. At one point, he vanished underwater under the ship, and we thought it was the end, but he emerged again and crawled onto the ice sheet. What a tough, tough dog.
Man, I say, that's a tough damn dog, man.
A firefighter in Grudzites on the Vistula River, 60 miles inland from the Bay of Gdansk, told the Associated Press the dog was spotted Saturday floating on ice through the city. Firefighters tried to save him, but could not approach the dog due to shifting ice sheets. The Baltika crew, now moored in the city of Gdynia, had been searching for the dog's owners. The dog didn't welcome the first two people who came for him, keeping his distance and showing no recognition. And that couple was told to go pound, sand, man. Get out of here, you creep.
No, he's our dog. I said,
get out of here. He ain't your dog. But they have him. He's safe. He's warm. He's like, he can't believe his good fortune. He's given interviews.
Really?
No, not really. But, so another heartwarming dog story. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. The stories we couldn't get to tonight. Hemphill Township, Pennsylvania. Police reported a bizarre gas station robbery in Westmoreland County Tuesday night. According to police, Gino Conti, age 31, walked into the Shell gas station on Route 30 in Hemphill Township, and he asked for a box of cigarettes. When the clerk turned around, police said Conti pulled out a fork and demanded money. Police said he then took the money and ate it using a fork. No, he said that there was no money in the cash register, so Conti grabbed the cigarettes and left. Police caught up with Conti a short time later. He faces several charges, including robbery and simple assault. What a dumbass. In Lima, that would be Peru, Peruvian doctors amputated the healthy leg of an 86-year-old man, then amputated the other leg when they realized their mistake.
Oh, boy.
Well, I guess they got to take the rotten leg off, but...
Oh.
I was shocked when I lifted the sheet and saw they'd taken his left leg, the man's daughter said. The ulcer was on his right leg, and they had to amputate that one, too, to keep the infection from spreading. The Alberto Sabagal Hospital in the coastal district of Kaleo, just north of Lima, said it had suspended the doctors involved in the botched surgery for a life-threatening ulcer. Good God. A Transportation Security Administration agent at New York's LaGuardia Airport has been reassigned after a traveler photographed her napping while in uniform. Bucky Turco of Brooklyn took the photograph Sunday and posted it online. His link was sent to TSA officials. I thought that was the name of the guy, but that's the name of the photographer.
Bucky, thank God for you, Bucky.
Thank you, Bucky. Anyway, the unidentified agent has been reassigned to desk duty. He is now working as a surgeon in Peru. Oh, that's great. The agent might have been on a break. TSA spokeswoman Ann Davis said agents have very demanding jobs, but they should use break rooms instead of resting in public areas. So if we find out that the agent was actually on a break, don't you feel like the back end of a horse? New York City's transit agency is investigating a video posted online that shows a man kissing and snuggling with a live chicken on a subway. Bud Dickman, who took the video, said, "I'm kidding, Bud."
That wasn't me at all.
Kidding. The subway rider who took the video said Thursday that it was one of those New York moments she felt compelled to record. Kyle Kaiser, who's a 27-year-old architect from Brooklyn, and two friends boarded the Uptown No. 6 train. Well, we'll continue this tomorrow. I hope that wasn't the guy that was snuggling with a chicken. Phil Hendry Show produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Ralph Rodriguez. Until tonight or tomorrow morning. Tomorrow night, a very pleasant good morning from El Pacifico.
That wasn't me at all, man. I'm sleeping with a chicken.
Phil Hendry.